You're listening to Australia's fastest growing podcast network. This is the Lifestyle Pod Network. You're listening to The Dream Show with Jane Theresa Anderson.
Welcome to The Dream Show. I'm Jane Theresa Anderson, and this is episode 157. And Scott is my guest today on to talk about a dream, or actually several dreams, but I should precede that by saying, as I always need to say at the beginning of The Dream Show, in case you haven't listened to this before, the formula when we have a guest on is that we arrange with our volunteer, that's the guest, to come onto the show. But the thing that I don't know until we start recording is the dream that the person is bringing, because we understand from you, our beautiful audience, that you like to hear the whole process of hearing the dream for the first time with me and taking it from there. Of course, we've just finished recording that, and here I am recording the bit to go on the front of the show. So now I can tell you that when Scott comes on, fascinating, absolutely fascinating podcast, this one. He comes on, introduces a recurring dream that he's had throughout his life, and then moves on to talk about the fact that he's been lucid dreaming through most of his dreams for most of his life. So we, for those of you that have been wanting to cover a bit more on lucid dreaming, it's a lovely listening to Scott's, how Scott got into lucid dreaming, the techniques that he uses, what it feels like to him, and at what point in a dream he stops being lucid or chooses to stop being lucid. So there's all of that, which is really interesting. And then also, Scott brings in a couple of dreams that he had just last night and recently, along slightly different themes, that he wasn't lucid in, and he just let them be normal dreams. And we go into those in the usual way, analysing them, interpreting them, relating them to his life. You'll get lots of tips as usual and insights from those that you can apply to your own dreams. And what's really lovely is that as you listen, you'll discover that those recent dreams really reflect some really inspirational changes that Scott has been going through in his own life in the last days and weeks. So all up, for many reasons, this is one to really listen to and share with as many friends as you can. Just before we go to Scott's dream, the website's www.dream.net.au. That's the kind of general website where you can go to find out everything that I do. Or the blog, which is janetheresa.com, where obviously there are blogs and also lots of other exciting stuff happening. And if you want to listen back through all the podcasts of The Dream Show, all 157 episodes, that's where you go, to the blog and click podcasts. Or, of course, there's the Dream Store, which is janetheresaanderson.com, or find me on Facebook. There are now two Facebook sites. There's the Facebook like page, which has been there for a long time. And just this week, for all sorts of reasons, which I won't go into, I launched another kind of Facebook page. Go to any of those sites, you'll find your way through. But more importantly than any of that, let's go to Scott and his dream. Welcome to The Dream Show. Scott, how are you this morning?
I'm fine, thanks, Jane.
And have you been up for quite a while? Have you got anything done, or have you just sort of got up and thought, I'm on The Dream Show. I've better find a dream.
Well, oh no, I got up early enough and, you know, had a cup of tea and got my voice all nice and warmed up. So, I when you wake up sometimes, and your voice is all croaky. And like but no, I'm well, just done the usual thing and checked the garden. It's all nice and wet.
Oh, yeah, that's wonderful. Okay, as usual, I have no idea what any of the guests are going to come up with a dream, so it's all yours, Scott. What have you got for me?
I have a recurring dream.
Yeah?
That I've had since I can remember.
Since childhood?
Yeah.
So how does it go?
Yeah. It started, as I said, since childhood, and I sort of, appear sometimes inside and sometimes outside of a house. And they're always a different house.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's, or even a townhouse or a unit or something like that, but most of the time it's a house. And sometimes I appear inside, and there's people around, and there's a party, and not a lot of people, and not too bright and it's not too dark, and there's music on, and it's not too loud either. And so when I was younger, I heard about lucid dreaming, like when I was probably 10 or 12.
Yes.
So I sort of started trying to do some lucid dreaming, right? As in, like I am in control of my dream.
Yes.
You know, and it took me a few years, but I got it. But I was just sometimes, you know, I would like drift between lucid and then sometimes I just decide, I'll just let the dream go, you know.
Let it go its own way, you mean? Yeah,
and see where it goes. And if I don't like it, well, then I'll change it.
Yes.
And if I don't like it at all, I'll just wake myself up. There's this one time I remember I just sort of like appeared on a dirt track, and it was at night time. It was the first time I remember I'm like a long way away from the house.
Mm.
And I saw the light, and it was definitely in Australia, because I remember the old fire trails when I was a kid down in Sydney, and that the fire brigade trails. I was walking along one of those, and there was the creepy trees around and all sorts of stuff, and I heard these dogs, and they were getting closer and they were barking. I thought there's definitely two dogs, because I'm a dog person and I'm pretty good.
Yeah.
And with dogs, you know, and these dogs, I could tell, were kind of vicious. And I was taught that if the dog goes for your jugular, if you grab their paws and just basically stretch your arms out, it breaks their sternum and, you know, knocks them out or whatever.
Yes.
And I was walking on this track, and sure enough, and these dogs just went for me. And I was like, whoa, I have to do something about this. And I did this move, and the other dog was a little bit behind, and I had to do it again. And that was the first time I ever saw blood in my dream. And then I walked up, and I felt exhausted, and I walked up to this house, and it was this old rickety, like, Queenslander house with a big veranda all the way around, very, very low lit, and there was this farmer there, and he's, you killed my dogs, get out of here, and she's shooken up in the air, and off I ran, and I woke up, and I was like, well, that was different.
So none of that was lucid. That particular dream, you weren't lucid in that one, Scott.
No, I was. No, because I remember thinking to myself, I've got to do something here.
Put your arms out.
And I actually, I had to protect myself.
Mm.
And like I said, it was the first time I actually saw blood, and I was like, ooh, okay. And I was like, oh, man, I felt exhausted.
Yes.
You know, like physically. But other times it's been great. When I've just, like, you know, I've either appeared like turning up at the party, or I'm in there, and there's people I know, there's people I don't know, there's dead friends of mine there as well. Through my life, you know, people have died.
Yes.
And they've been there, and I've gone, oh, there's so and so, and I walked up and started talking to them.
Being lucid,
yeah.
Yes.
And gone up and started talking to them, and they're like, yeah, I'm okay, it's all good, you know. And yeah, it's just been, I mean, it's actually, yeah, it's, like I said, it's been with me since I was, you know, probably eight, I reckon.
So you've had the sort of recurring house dream since you were about eight, but you said that you only got interested in lucid dreaming about age 10 to 12.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just before we actually sort of look more at the dreams, just for all our listeners who are always keen to understand a bit more about lucid dreaming and about what it's like, there are many sort of well-known techniques to become lucid, and you've described how you found out how to do it, and you put a lot of work over the years into fine-tuning how to become lucid. Would you like to explain to everyone listening how you do it, or how you worked out how to become lucid in a dream?
Well, at first you have to realise that you're in the dream.
Mm.
Yeah. Once you've realized that you're in the dream, that's when that's when it came to me. Okay, yes, I'm in the dream. Okay, I want to walk over there. And I literally just started that way. And I went, oh, I can do that.
Yes.
Now I want to walk over there. And then I could do that. And then, you know, sometimes I'd wake up because, you know, it's kind of brain straining at the time. But after, you know, after a while, you kind of get used to it by saying, I want to go there.
Yes.
And then you can do other things. Like, like I said, I can just like turn it off and I'll just let the dream run, see where it goes, and I can almost like sit back and enjoy it.
Mm. But at that point where you sit back and enjoy it, do you lose the feeling of being lucid, or are you still lucid but just saying, okay, let's see how the dream goes, but I'm still lucid?
Yeah. Now, I'm still lucid, but I'm just sort of like, oh, I'm just going to let this one go. I'll just see how much fun it's going to be, what it's going to do. And yeah. And if I don't like it, then I say, no, I don't like going that way. No, it's getting a bit weird, and I'll change it around.
Step one, you know, that's that, as you say, the step one, as you correctly say, is you've got to wake up to the dream. You've got to, in the dream, you've got to go, hang on a minute, I'm dreaming. Now I'm lucid. What am I going to do? Now, a lot of people can't get to that. A lot of people want to be able to get to the stage where they're in their dream and then they think, hang on a minute, I'm dreaming. Were you just lucky, or have you any idea what it was that you trained yourself to do to get to that point of realizing you're in a dream?
Well, I made sure, what I used to do was, I just made sure I was very comfortable. I'd be lying straight on my back, my hands just on my chest. Made sure I was very nice and comfortable. And as I'm going to sleep, I was like, okay, I was just thinking, okay, when I get in the dream, I know when I'll be in the dream.
Right.
And then, boink, and then I'm in the dream and I'm like, okay, I'm here. It normally takes a few seconds. It takes, you know, a few seconds. Well, it's, I don't know, how long does a few seconds long last in a dream in real time? I don't know.
Real time. To answer your question, whatever's happening in the dream, it actually takes the same amount of time in waking life. So if you imagine the dream as a movie, so in the movie you may see the plane leaving London and arriving in Sydney, but if in the movie or in your dream that scene takes 3 minutes, that's 3 minutes of actual time that you're dreaming that, even though it would actually take you longer to fly from London to Sydney. But you said something interesting there. You said, so essentially you got yourself comfortable and you put out an intention to lucid dream. I'm going to lucid dream. That's an intention. But you also said something interesting, Scott. You said within seconds you're in the dream. That's what you said, didn't you?
Yeah.
Because usually...
Yeah, a couple of seconds.
Usually it takes, for a lot of people, but I should backtrack again. According to science, which is not always correct at all, but the kind of traditional scientific model of dreaming is that it takes about an hour and a half for you to go through the first four stages of sleep. You know, you go way down into deep healing sleep and then you come up gradually. And by the time you get up to about level five, you start to dream. So according to science, that rapid eye movement part of dream, you know, where you put the electrodes in the brain, you can say, yeah, they're dreaming, dreaming brainwaves on, rapid eye movements happening, normally takes an hour and a half. But we all know from our everyday experience that we can do what you did, for example, which is fall asleep and go straight into a dream, or have a half-hour nap in the afternoon and wake up and you've definitely had a dream and it's every bit as exciting as the dream after an hour and a half. So straight away, it's interesting that you go into these dreams and they may or may not have the same brainwave patterns and they may or may not have the same rapid eye movement as your kind of so-called normal dream would have an hour and a half down the track. So we'll just make that observation. That's really interesting. When you don't lucid dream, if you wake up from a dream and you haven't been lucid dreaming, are you generally still on your back or are you in another position?
I can have, like, sometimes when the snooze alarm goes, I can have dreams in that 10 minutes, but that's like after I've been asleep most of the night or something like that. You know?
Yeah.
But now I don't, it doesn't matter what position I go to sleep in. But when I was teaching myself how to lucid dream, I used to lie, on my back and leg straight, my arms and my arm. But now I just go to sleep in any other way, any other position, and I wake up in any other position, I suppose, as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. So when you have a dream that isn't lucid, when you wake up and you go, oh, wow, I was just having a good dream there, or a bad dream or whatever, and I wasn't lucid, what would you say is the difference in feeling, apart from knowing that you're awake, knowing that you're dreaming in the lucid dream? Is there any other kind of quality difference between the kind of dream where you're lucid dreaming and the kind of dream when you're not?
Yes, well, I had one last night, and it was... I tried to control more of it. Because it was a very strong emotional dream. Mm. And it was with a person who I don't particularly like, and was there, and who had befriended another friend of mine who was a good friend. And they were friends, and I was like, no, I don't like this, and I tried to walk away. And then my other friend pulled me back, basically, and said, "No, you've got to work it out with this guy." And I couldn't speak.
Yeah.
I was so angry, and I was so hurt, and I was literally like that. You know, I just couldn't speak. And so I kept on walking away, and then eventually I just said, "I hadn't had enough of this," and I woke myself up.
So you weren't lucid, or you were only lucid at the point where you'd said, "I've had enough of this," and woke yourself up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was just like it felt horrible not being able to say what I needed to say.
Yes. Yeah.
And I couldn't do it, and it was very odd. But the other times when I just had other sort of other dreams, like, you know, like another one I had last night as well was even really quite weird, and I just let it go. it was great. It was really, really fun. There was lightning, and there was electricians, and there was test tubes, and there was a little lamb that looked like a baby, and I just let it go. It was so funny.
And while you were in it and you let it go, so were you lucid while you watched it, or were you just banging a non-lucid dream at that point?
Oh, I was lucid, just letting it go. Yeah.
Just letting it go.
I was lucid, just letting it go, because it was just so strange and funny. I'm going to sit back and enjoy this dream. It was good. It was weird, but I was just like, oh, I'll enjoy this. This is fun.
And when you woke up, were you energized, or were you exhausted from that night's dream? I guess what I'm really asking is, in general, when you're doing a lot of lucid dreaming, you mentioned exhaustion before, do you wake up feeling refreshed, or do you wake up feeling more exhausted when you've had a lucid dreaming night than a night where you've just let the dreams go?
I'm not really sure, to be honest. I'm not really sure. Some of the dreams I've had, I've actually been dreaming, this girl has been appearing in my dream, and it's the same girl, and when I wake up in the morning, I actually feel like I'm in love. Like, I'm like, oh my god, there's still hope. Oh my god, there's still hope for me. There's still hope for me. She's out here somewhere. But I've met her three times, and it's been the same girl, and I'm like, I haven't seen this girl before in my life.
Yeah.
And she's beautiful brunette girl, and I'm like, and I wake up and I actually feel like I'm in love with her, and it lasts for a good hour or so, and then I'm like, oh, wow, where is she? And then that dissipates, and then I'm like, oh.
Well, but if you think about her, even though you don't actually know her, I mean, you got to know her in the dream, what three words would you use to describe her personality?
Oh, I love the three words would describe her personality. That's a tough one. Her personality.
Or her approach to life, if that's easier.
Well, caring.
Yeah.
And just, she's nice, you know? Nice girl, you know? She's nice. And makes me feel good.
Makes you feel good in what way? Makes you feel cared for and...
Yeah, cared for and loved and somebody who will be around.
Will be around, will be there for you. Okay, I'm going to... This is just so lovely, and also the talk about lucid dreaming, which our audience loves as well, and we'll go and talk some more about that. But I also just want to talk about a little bit about this girl dream and about the dreams you had last night as well, and then come back to the more specific lucid dreaming. Because what you've described there in that last little one, you've given us so many goodies, Scott. Lots of lovely stuff for everybody. What you've described in that last one, there'll be a lot of our listeners thinking, I don't lucid dream, but I know that dream. I know that dream. I know that dream where you meet someone and you're totally in love with them. They're totally charismatic. And you wake up and, like you said, you go, "Ah," and some of them go,
"Yeah,
I know I've got..." I've had emails or in the old days letters from people saying, "I've got the face. I know exactly what they look like. I've got their name. I've got these details. I'm going out in the world to look for them." I've had emails or letters in the old days from people saying, "I've spent 10 years of my life knocking back potential partners who I really like because I'm looking for my soulmate that I've met in a dream." And that always makes me really sad because... that's not what the dream is about. You know, it never, ever, ever works that you meet a person first in a dream. I mean, you may later go out, as you said, she's a brunette. You may, Scott, walk down the street in a couple of days and meet someone that looks quite a lot like the girl in the dream and has some of those characteristics. And then you can go, "Yeah, that's for me." And you may or may not, well, another person may say, "Oh, she's the exact person that was in my dream." But she wouldn't be. She would just remind you of her. Because what that dream is about, and it's so helpful to know this, is that if you look at everyone and everything in a dream, particularly when you're not lucid, or as you say, when you let the dream go, if you look at everyone and everything in the dream as being something about you, it becomes really helpful in your day-to-day life. So the fact that you've met someone in your dream who is caring and makes you feel good and loved, and you feel will always be around for you, means that in these dreams you have met that part of yourself. So what that means is to meet that part of yourself in a dream means you're not usually in touch with that part of yourself while you're awake. So for some reason, you understand. So just to clarify for the audience, it would mean that you don't always care for yourself in the best possible way. You don't always love yourself in the best possible way. You're not always around for yourself in the best possible way. And hey, that applies to many of us a lot of the time. But for you, it's really drawing attention. And the lovely thing is that for whatever reason, since you've been having this dream of the girl, there's been something happening in your life which has opened you up to enable you to recognize that you do have that aspect of yourself, and it's time to connect with that. So what that suggests to me, because the dream always reflects the day or two before, so whenever you've had this dream, if you look back over the day or two before and say, what has happened in my life that has made me feel comfortable about being okay with knowing that I've got this part of myself, that instead of having to look to the outside to be cared for, or thinking that I'll never be cared for and loved, or thinking that, you know, the whole gamut of things, I'm not worthy to be loved, who am I, you know, all those kind of things, it's suddenly realizing, hey, I am worthy of this, and I can give myself that love and care because I'm worth it. I am so worth it. I'm a good person to be around. And the magical bit is the moment that you really do connect with that beyond the dream, like you've got that feeling in the dream, and the moment you wake up and understand that about the dream, and instead of going out to find this wonderful person, you go, okay, I've sort of connected with this part of myself inside. How can I bring her, this aspect of myself, more into my daily life? And the more you allow that to happen, the miracle is that that's actually often when you will meet this soulmate person, looking nothing like the character in a dream, but because you're feeling better about yourself, it's, you know, you attract that person in.
Yeah, I agree with that. What you were saying about some people, you know, go out looking for them and stuff like, and looking for their dream for soulmate and stuff like that. And I was like, no, I don't feel that I need to do that. I don't feel that I need to go out there or whatever. And I totally agree with what you said. It's not actually them, it's actually me.
It's you, yeah. So can you relate, you don't have to share it with us, but can you relate to there being a change in your waking life that might have enabled you to connect with this part of yourself in your dream?
I'm going through a little bit of depression, and I'm starting to get above it. So things are changing and my attitudes are changing.
Yes.
Things are changing in my life, but my attitudes are changing. And one of the things that, hit the hammer right on the nail, was, you know, like thinking about, you know, like if you don't love yourself, no one else will love you. Mm. And I haven't really liked myself for a little while. Mm. That's a little bit of part of the depression. So I'm trying to get out of that. And I'm thinking, no, actually, I'm a nice guy. I'm a nice guy, and it would be nice. It would be nice if I had somebody around. And so, you know, I'm changing my attitudes within myself and my outlook on life, and just calming down a little bit, I suppose. Sometimes I get a bit manic. Some people call me manic, but I get carried away sometimes. But, just sort of, you know, taking a breath.
Yes.
Okay, this is what's happening, getting on with it, and, you know, and just like day by day, just doing one specific thing and then going for a walk or something like that and whatever. But basically, yeah, I've actually been looking back at myself and thinking, no, I haven't been the nicest person at times.
In your own judgment.
in my own judgment. And so I should be, you know, I should be nicer to myself, and I should actually, exactly what you said.
That's so lovely, and that's so inspiring for people listening in and maybe going through some similar feelings and things as well. And it's an interesting thing about depression, because as you will know, because you've gone through it, there are many forms of depression, you know, sometimes caused by chemical imbalances, sometimes caused by pushing a lot of things away from our lives and leaving a hole, you know. And in a sense, that's what I'm sort of getting from what you're saying. It's this almost this feeling of, I can't have that, I can't have that, I can't have that, I can't be that because I'm not a nice person. But now suddenly I feel differently about myself. I can bring all these wonderful things back into my life. So if you think of depression as being literally a hole, like there's something missing, I'm feeling depression, the moment that you allow beautiful things to go in there, the depression's not there anymore. I know that sounds really simplistic, but it's kind of quite an interesting way to look at it.
And, simplistic is good.
And I love also that last night, those dreams you had, you know, about seeing, which were only partially lucid, seeing the friend that has always been a good friend to you, and the other friend that you really don't like, and seeing them get together and feeling really angry about it. That's actually, without going into great detail as well, even that was a really uncomfortable dream to be in. To me, as a dream analyst looking in, it's like, oh, that is such a healing dream, Scott. That is so beautiful. You know, sometimes you've got to let yourself go through those really horrible, confronting, nasty feeling dreams, because again, it's parts of yourself sorting things out. So although these two friends are people that you actually know, you know, you look at one of those friends, it doesn't matter if it's the good friend or the bad friend, you look at one of those friends and you see them as whatever, and somebody else might look at that same person and see them through different eyes. You know, we all see people through our different experiences or our different whatever. So when you dream of those two people, you're not really dreaming of them, you're dreaming about your feelings about them. So when you're dreaming about the person that you didn't like, you're possibly dreaming about what your experiences were with this person rather than about them, you know? And so that's why the anger, why you felt the anger in a dream. It's like any anger around that that you might not have acknowledged up to now, or you might have tried to hold back, or even anger that you might have expressed and thought it didn't go anywhere, no one got what I was saying there or feeling, that anger stays in your body. And so the moment, to me, looking at that dream, it was an integration. It was like carrying on from what you have just explained that's going on in your life. It's like, well, my feelings about my good friend, that represents some good feelings about myself, and my feelings about this bad friend, that represents some unresolved anger that I've got with this friend. Well, I'm letting that all get together, integrate, literally like it did in the dream, come together. And when that comes together and you heal that part of yourself, it's almost like, I don't know what your healing would be, Scott, but you know, it could be forgiving the friend for what happened, or it could be forgiving yourself for what happened, or I don't know, but the moment, or it could just be letting it go. But the moment you do that, what your body then has to do is let go of the associated emotion. So if you've held anger about whatever went wrong in that relationship, then the moment that you go in your dream, look, it's okay. As you said earlier, I can rise above this. The moment you rise above it, your body has to let go of the emotion. Otherwise it's still with you and kind of unconsciously getting in your way and limiting what you do. So unfortunately, we then have to experience that release in the dream, which is what you got. And that anger you had in the dream was probably greater than any anger you've ever had when you're awake, was it?
Because I couldn't, I couldn't express myself at the time, and in my dream, I still couldn't.
Yeah, that's right. So you've got two things going on there. You've got this huge amount of anger that just has to get out of your body, and it probably did in the dream, and if not, I'll help you with that in a minute, and I'm not going to ask you to get angry. And the other thing is kind of like symbolically, it could be saying, I've always felt that I haven't been able to express not so much my anger, but what's underneath my anger. You know, we all get angry, but anger, as you well know, isn't the point. It's what's making you angry. It's the issue underneath that we sometimes find hard to express. So for me, that is such a positive dream. And also because you released that, well, you kind of released the anger. You had a bit of difficulty because you say you couldn't express it, but you at least acknowledged it in the dream. And the other friend in the dream said, the good friend said, this is okay. So that's like within you, this part of you saying, this is okay. I'm ready for this. I'm ready to integrate this and let it all go. And then the fact that you said the next part of the dream was lightning and electricity. I'm thinking, yeah, that's great. That feels to me a bit like anger too. Like boom, bash, crash, lightning. it was letting go there. Yeah. And it was beautiful. Yes. Because once you see about yourself those things, you know, I may have been angry in the past. I may be angry now. But in a sense, that's beautiful because I'm letting it go. Now, none of us in an ideal world would stand in a room with someone and be angry with them, even though we do because we're human. But in an ideal world, we would tell that person, I feel really angry with you at the moment. I know it doesn't sound like I'm angry, but I'm really angry. Let me just try to work out why I'm angry and maybe I can tell you that. Now, that's an ideal world, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And when it doesn't, you've literally got to go in another room and get the anger out. But the point of that is to get underneath it and find out what the issue is. Sorry, you go.
No, I was going to say, I've actually had to hold my anger in for a number of years, not against anybody, but just with everything. I had I suppose you'd call it an aneurysm about 10 years ago. Hang on, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Behind my left eye on the wall of my brain, I had a blood vessel burst.
Yeah.
And I was in the hospital profusely bleeding for 4 hours out of my eye, out of my ear, out of my nose. And I honestly thought I was going to die. And and they managed to fix me up, and I was in hospital overnight, and I was okay. But they did an MRI, and that's when they found that out, and then they told me that I had chronic sinusitis. And they said, one of the questions was, have you been under a lot of stress lately? And I said, well, actually, yes. You know, and they said, well, it was a combination of stress and your sinusitis. And so since then, I've deliberately not allowed myself to get into that situation again. like a stressful situation, and or get myself like to that sort of like anger or situation, and because I'm scared that it might happen again.
Yes. So how have you? So how have you handled? You're totally sensible. I can see that. So how have you handled or managed to handle that anger that you haven't been able to express?
Pretty much walked away from it. And sometimes it's been unresolved, and I just I'll just block it out. I'll just say no. I'm sorry. I'm not going there. And I'll just walk away from it. And in my own mind, I'm just like, no, I'm not doing this. This is wrong. I can't do this because I don't want my head to explode again. Well, that's what I call it.
Yeah, I can understand. It's exactly what it would be.
And so, you know, and I've been wary. I got a little bit of a scare the other day. I actually had a very small nosebleed on the right side. And I was like, okay. Okay, you calm down. And it was very, very small. And I was like, okay, and I haven't had any since. And I'm like, okay, all right. And to me, that was a bit of a warning.
Yes.
For me to sort of say, okay, you're getting yourself stressed.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you've got to calm down and change.
So the lovely thing about what you say is that for all those reasons, you have stepped away from situations where you might be angry, and that's good. And then the tricky bit has been that by kind of, as you used the word block, I kind of walk away and block the anger or block the stress, is that it then, as you say, is sometimes unresolved. So it goes deep inside you, and your dreams try to resolve it, usually can't, but try to work through it. And that, you know, one day, unless you resolve it, it'll come out and explode. So the tricky bit for you and for anyone, all of us that go through this really, is to be able to then, once you've walked away, to go, okay, I can probably tell you what I was angry about on the surface, but what was I really angry about? Or I can probably tell you what stresses me in life, but how far back does that go? Why does that stress me and not someone else? Or why do I get myself into stressful situations? Or, you know, it's being able to look beneath it. And there are three really great approaches to this. And one that I'm sure you'll have met through your life is that you can do a pretty sort of practical exercise, which if we take, say, your dream from last night, is you can write a letter, which you're not going to post, it's just for you. you can hit the delete button after, but you write a letter, say, either to the bad friends and express what it really was that upset you, and try to touch the emotions underneath anger, which are often things like feeling of abandonment, hurt, any kind of emotional pain, grief, loss, anything like that, and try to sort of name it and then delete it. But at least you'll have acknowledged it to yourself and got it out there. Another way is when you wake up is actually to follow on from your bad dream, which I see as a good dream, and while you're awake, to visualize those two, the good friend and the bad friend, hugging each other, and then as they hug, the so-called bad friend becoming good. So whatever that means for you, whether it means visualizing the two hugging and a lovely white light surrounding them, or whether it means them just hugging and going off and doing something matey together, but essentially for you to, while you're awake, take those two dream symbols, the good and the bad, that are ready to integrate with you, within you, but let it happen, and just basically transform the bad into the good. And then kind of watch over the next couple of days what feelings come up, because you may then get a bit teary just for a couple of days. And what will be happening is that the emotions underneath the original anger, not any anger you've got now, we're talking about the original anger, the emotions underneath that might come up. And then you go, okay, right, I get that better now. He abandoned me, or he made me feel small, or whatever it was. And the moment that you've got in touch with that feeling under it, that's the one you can let go, because you're ready to let it go. And the other thing, particularly with you, because you can lucid dream, and this is one of the benefits of lucid dreaming for you and anyone out there, is that that process that I just described there, which is what I call dream alchemy, a dream alchemy visualization, which is you wake up from the dream. If you understand the dream, then you visualize it in a changed, transformed way. And that actually kind of reprograms you. Well, when you lucid dream, you can actually do that same process in the dream. So you're used to having a dream. And as you say, you can then control, okay, I'm going to walk this way, do this thing in this dream, whatever it is. But knowing that tip about dream alchemy, as a lucid dreamer, you can do that in the dream. So instead of maybe walking away from that couple in the dream, you can then go, okay, I'm lucid, I'm in the dream, I'm going to get these two to hug each other, and I'm going to transform the bad one into something really lovely. You know, something like that. I'm just giving you the general sort of drift so that you can make it your own.
Yep, I understand what you're saying.
So that would be really good. So there's lots there, and I just wanted to go slightly back into your recurring dream and the lucid dream before unfortunately we have to stop speaking, even though it's extremely interesting. But the recurring dream, partly for you, but also for our listeners out there, Scott. The dream always reflects the day or two before, because whatever's been going on in our life, consciously and unconsciously, is processed by our dreaming mind or our dreaming brain that night. So whatever emotions you are aware of, and whatever emotions you aren't aware of but are there anyway, you know, stirred up in your unconscious, will be processed in your dream. And if those emotions resonate with something from your past, then your dream may come up with a symbol from your past as well. So your dreaming brain tries to kind of update your hard drive every night according to your most recent experiences, and in doing that it kind of like goes back through the files, goes, you know, accesses the past and compares what's just happened to what's happened in the past, makes decisions, updates, whatever, and then you wake up in the morning, you may or may not see life slightly differently. That's how it works. But what it means in terms of a recurring dream is that every time you have a recurring dream, and a recurring dream is more often unresolved than resolved. An unresolved recurring dream means there's something in your life that's unresolved that keeps coming up and keeps coming up and keeps coming up. So if you have an unresolved recurring dream, you look back at the last couple of days, and without even being able to apply interpretation or analysis techniques, you might begin to see a pattern. Whenever I feel this or whenever this happens, boom, there's the dream. The dream must be related to those feelings in some way. So that's a kind of tip. But in your particular dream, you describe it so beautifully as a house. It's always a different house. Sometimes it's a big house. Sometimes it's a small house. Different amounts of dark and light, loud or whatever. And my feeling about your dream is that it's almost like your iconic dream, you know, and the house is probably you. So probably on dreams when you have a lovely big house and everything's all lovely and beautiful, may follow days when you've actually been feeling quite expansive and in touch with your full potential and your full self. And maybe on dreams when it's more like a tiny place, or it feels more restricted, or it feels darker, maybe more like a metaphor for how you felt in the last couple of days, more restricted, darker. You know, so maybe look at your kind of houses and your house design and your house vibe, so to speak, as a kind of reflection of how you were feeling in the day or two before.
Okay. But all right. So in that dream, is it, how come I see my dead friends?
Ah, yes. I was going to come to that.
That's just a memory, isn't it?
It is. You know, there are some experiences that we have when we're dreaming that definitely belong in that other out there camp, you know. I mean, we've all had them occasionally from time to time. We've woke up and said, how could I possibly have known that? Or that is amazing. I dreamt of so-and-so and they turned up. Or I had a connection with someone that had died and they gave me information that I couldn't possibly have known, that I can verify. So we've all had that from time to time. So we do have to say that that can happen. And then we just put it over there and put that in the mysteries and miracles of life, you know, the kind of thing that can happen when you're dreaming and your logical brain is turned off and we have that kind of access. But the reason I like to kind of put it over there is because it's an intensely personal thing for us when we have it, but also because it's also normal and natural for many of us to dream of people, friends that we have known that have dead or other things, and it's symbolic. And the danger is that if, particularly in a podcast like this, when you're talking to lots of people, is if you then say, okay, some of these dreams, maybe you are actually in some kind of communication with the greater mysterious arena of life.
No, I don't see it that way.
Oh, good.
I don't see it that way. I see it as, because whenever it's only very short conversation that I have with them, and I know that they're okay.
That's really good.
I know that they're okay, and it makes me feel better.
So, but that's still the same kind of thing. What I'm saying is that you're feeling in those dreams that you're actually talking to them as they, and they are now communicating, they are well. And so that can happen, but also these kind of dreams can be symbolic, and people can be in danger of dismissing the symbolic nature of the dream by believing it literally. So in your dream, for example, we won't know, it's for you to decide, Scott, but you may indeed be in contact with them, letting you know that they're okay, and that's great. But you may also consider that, again, if you go the symbolic track and you look at everyone and everything in your dream as an aspect of yourself, you could say that the friends of yours that have died, when they appear in your dream and they tell you they're fine, could be part of the ending of your grieving. I'm okay with the fact that you're gone. I can let you go now. I've come to the end of my grieving. So it can be more about you than about them, about your own processing. And a lot of people that do regularly dream of people that have passed can be pretty spooked. So just to sort of round off this, because I just want to make sure, not so much for you, Scott, but for some people listening out there, that a common thing that can happen is that a person who's very loved to you and was always extremely caring and wonderful and never did anything wrong by you and died can come up in a dream, and you can dream and they can give you this vitriol, this anger, this terrible, terrible stuff. And people can wake up thinking, well, is this what they really thought of me? Are they getting at me from the afterlife? Or, and, you know, and be absolutely just terrible. But actually, it's more those dreams are more them dealing with their own grief. You know, one of the processes of grief when you lose someone is to be really angry. Why did you die and let me go? Why did you abandon me? So to dream then of a scenario with this person where there's anger and abandonment, that's where the dream comes from. So I just wanted to make that very clear, that any dream of anyone that has passed is very... it is much more likely to be a symbolic dream about yourself than about them, and that can be very comforting to know. So for me, Scott, for you, it could be either, but I'd have the feeling that it's you coming to terms, because it sounds from what you say as if you've had a lot of experience of friends dying, and it's you in your dreaming state being okay with that and letting that go when the time is right for you.
Yes, I would agree with you on that one.
So, and your lovely dream about the vicious dogs, my very quick take on that, because often in the dream show, what we do is we would take one dream and spend like the whole 45 minutes just looking deeply into that dream. And this show with you has gone a different way, which I'm very grateful for, because I think it's been extremely interesting and uplifting and inspiring for many people listening in, particularly people going through a lot of change, or maybe, you know, coming out of depression or wanting to come out of depression or having the soulmate dream and all of these things. But just a quick look at your vicious dog's dream there. I love that you got lucid, because by the moment you got lucid, you knew how to deal with them. But they probably represented it, that dream probably came a couple of days after you feeling either that you encountered that kind of sense of attack on the outside in something someone said to you, or maybe feeling within yourself a part of yourself jumping up ready to attack, and you're going, no, hold back, that's not the way to go. But just one other last thing I do want to say is that just to beware in lucid dreaming is fantastic. We've gone through in the little chat with you some of the positives of it, particularly being able to do dream alchemy in the dream. The danger can be of taking control in too many of your dreams. The reason being that because dreams process the last couple of days, in a sense, they're trying to do, as I said before, trying to do the kind of updating of where we're up to in life, and also trying to process emotions, and sometimes trying to problem solve, and sometimes trying to let emotions go. So those dreams, well, even without going through interpreting the dreams or understanding them or analyzing them, even without doing that, they're providing a healthy thing for us. They're actually sorting through stuff for us. Sometimes it's unresolved, but at least they're having a go, you know? And so to take control in all of your dreams can actually shut you off from that aspect of your health. It can shut you off from your dreamy mind being able to complete a process.
Yeah, I understand that. So that's why it's like I was saying, I was like, sometimes I'm just, I know I'm in the dream, and I go, no, I'll just let it run. I'm just going to, you know, sit back and enjoy this and see what I'm going to see or learn out of this dream. You know?
That's really good.
Yeah, I can stand back and I do understand what you're saying, that, yeah, having too much control because, yeah, it could be, yes, yeah, I agree, it could be dangerous to yourself, yeah.
Yeah, and I particularly thought in that one where you said you woke up so exhausted, I thought that sounds like you haven't been able to get the replenishment in your sleep because you've been kind of awake to your dream. So I'm glad that you've got that pretty much in balance, Scott. And for anyone listening out there that is excited to start lucid dreaming, please bear that in mind. My rule of thumb when people ask me, and it's kind of a little bit like plucked out of thin air, but I think it's about right. if you get to lucid dream, maybe look to doing lucid dreaming a couple of nights a week and to letting your dream go the other five nights is possibly around about the right formula. Scott, it's been absolutely wonderful speaking with you. Thank you. Is there anything else you'd like to ask or say or talk about before we have to wind this one down so that it fits into our length of podcast that people will listen to? Yes. If it's more than an hour, people sometimes can't download it.
Well, just that one thing. When I saw, it was the first time I ever saw blood in my dream.
How did you feel about it?
How did I feel about it? Yeah. I was shocked. Because I was like, that's the first time I'd ever seen blood. And probably the only time. So that was with the dogs. Other than that, no, actually, I've got some good notes I've written down. And you have explained a lot.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, it's a pleasure. On the blood thing, was that blood before you took control of the dream or after?
The dogs?
Yeah.
Well, I realised where I was.
You stuck your arms out.
I was on the track. And then I heard the dogs. So I was just sort of walking. And then they came at me. And that's when I went. And then I actually consciously said to myself, I've got to protect myself here. Mm. Otherwise, they're going to rip my throat out. And so that's when I took action.
Yeah.
And then after that, I was sort of, lost, and I saw that light up and, saw the other house and so on, as we've spoken about. But yeah.
When did you see the blood? When did you see the blood in that?
When I looked down at the dogs.
So after you took control of the dream?
After I took control of the dream, yeah.
Okay, so even though if you weren't lucid, if you see blood in a dream, as you all know listening in this, you can't do a dream dictionary approach, everything's individual, even so, in a kind of general thematic way, it can often be that if you see blood in a non-lucid dream, it can be that you're feeling sort of symbolic of feeling wounded, feeling hurt. It can be letting something go, as in blood flows. it can be seeing, basically acknowledging that something is hurtful. So even though you were lucid, you had that sense in the dream of protecting yourself. So there was attack and protect. So, it may have, even though you were lucid, had this feeling of processing how I'm dealing with when I feel like I'm under attack, how I'm dealing with protecting myself, trying to, as we all are, trying to fine tune and get that balance right. And perhaps recognizing either in your life now or in the past where the spilling of blood has been like, this has been painful for me. Because you particularly said that you saw the blood and you were then lost before you found the house. So it's a sense of being wounded and lost, hurt and lost. So it may be in the past that attack, protection, kind of when things have come up, you've been, how much do I attack? How much do I protect? How much do I defend myself? When am I defending myself too much? When too little? Maybe reflected in your dream about times way back in your past where you felt really hurt and wounded and lost, because that was the dream, wounded and lost, the blood and lost. So that it may be in time to time or in the more recent past where you felt like you're under attack, or you've noticed where you might normally try to protect yourself or defend yourself emotionally. It might be helpful to know that this may go way, way, way back to times when you felt emotionally wounded and lost. And as you've well described, I think you described some of coming out of depression as coming out of a sense of being lost as well. So it's a sense of knowing that go back to that soulmate kind of feeling, knowing that you have within you everything that you need to care for yourself and be there for yourself. So how can you ever be lost? You can't be wounded from now on because you have everything you need inside. And so therefore, how much to attack, how much to protect should no longer be an issue. You're just naturally yourself. And you describe beautifully in the middle of this podcast somewhere the feeling of, actually, why do I even need a soulmate or a partner? Because I just need me to be complete. And ironically, that's when a soulmate will often turn up. So, you know, that to me is what the blood was about.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. This has been so great.
Thank you for being a fantastic guest, Scott, on the podcast show. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
You're more than welcome, Jane.
And there we are. So, you know, please share that in all the ways that you know how, whether it's through email, through your various social media, or just through chatting to people, actually talking to people. Have you heard about the Dream Show? There are lots of good episodes. We really love the fact that we produce the Dream Show because apart from whatever it does for you, it's our way of getting a free resource out there worldwide to anyone that can get on the internet for free and help them to either accumulate the tools to interpret and begin to understand their own dreams, or to help them to help other people understand their dreams, or simply, as in many cases, just to listen and be inspired as to what our guests are going through and achieving in their lives. So share. The website address is again for me, dream.net.au. The blog, janetheresa.com, that's Teresa without an H. The dream store, janetheresaanderson.com, or find me on Facebook. have a wonderful month. I'm sure I'll be speaking to many of you between now and then in consultations and other things that are going on. And otherwise, I'll speak to you next month for the next episode of The Dream Show. I'm Jane Teresa Anderson.
The Dream Show is a production of Jane Teresa Anderson for the Lifestyle Pod Network. You can find more great podcasts like this one in the Lifestyle Pod Network section of iTunes.